Phela mina ngiyinsizwa mina. Ngiyinsizwa.
Getting close to December, so you need to stack your coins up. Head on over to easybet.co.za where it's simple, fun, and exciting, even if it's your first time gambling. If you sign up now, you score 50 Rand sign-up bonus, no deposit needed. Just use the promo code SHADY, PH. I am Shady, he's PH. It's a promo code. You get 50 bucks. Ilula lento. If you're looking for more, your first deposit gets you a 150% bonus, up to 1,500 Rand. Obviously, it's more coins to operate with, so you can win bigger. But wait, there's more. EasyBet will match your first bet up to 500 Rand. Kushukuthi imali oyifakayo bayayimatcha. So you're getting extra play without extra spend. And even if you're losing because, I don't know, it's not your day or it's not the situation, you can get 15% of your losing bets back every week because they're all about backing real players. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to easybet.co.za and sign up now and check it out for yourself. T's and C's apply. EasyBet Group Pty Limited is licensed and regulated by the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. No persons under the age of 18 may gamble. Winners know when to stop. Okay? Hola, 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 hola. Welcome to a very special edition of the Shady Podcast. I am not PH, but I can be for this episode and I probably should be, but I'll speak a lot more. And I've obviously got the lurker.
Yeah. I'm Shady of Shady Podcast. Why did you open the show like it was Simunye Grooves?
We are one.
Hola, hola, hola.
Why are you introducing the guest and I haven't even introduced the guest? Why don't you introduce the guest?
Because we were speaking off air. Guys, believe it or not, it's all smoke and mirrors. We've had a whole 1 hour conversation here.
We're finished.
Which we didn't tell this man about because it's going to be behind the scenes released as a special edition.
BTS. But I see members yeah. Club.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I'm Shady. I'm joined by my main man, Zimasa. He's in for PH. PH is in Dubai. He has a very big contract at the Burj Khalifa. He got an offer from some
Dubai.
Sheikh. PH what got an offer from a sheikh.
Is he DJing or?
No. The sheikh said he must come there. He's going to pee on him. Then $1 million. But I told him, come on, boy. It's just pee, bro. Take the pee, get the bag, come home.
PH.
You check.
PH, ndiyadlala mfethu. Ndiyadlala PH. It's him.
Anyways. I'm joking. He's at gigs in Dubai, bro.
Like, oh, okay.
Real talk. No, yeah, he's doing some stuff in Dubai. Hopefully, we'll see Paul at Dubai. Let me just say that. So
okay.
He's doing the Lord's work. Shout out PH.
Let's
he's back it. Next week.
Very interesting because when I got the call up, Bati, you must leave the reserves. You must come on starting lineup.
Yeah.
And they were like, we'll be speaking to Bramusi. I was like, this is going to be interesting because I think I've seen your persona shift quite a bit since that other party that we will mention in derogatory terms. I'm joking. Yeah. So just for this one.
Yeah.
But I've seen a shift in you. And the shift has been on the basis that you've become more black.
Okay.
It's a very interesting thing that happened. I mean, there were times where, you know, there was the whole scandal of like bulletproof at a rally and we were like, you know, and I know there's a white. No, I know there's a white guy who said, "There's a security risk, Musi. You gotta put on this thing." So maybe I think as a jump, what happened with that thing? Why did you come out there looking like?
Is that how you want to start the show?
No, but you gotta start with the stuff. Then you gotta go into serious stuff.
If I'd known that's how you gotta start, I would have won another one today. I would have been like, "Come with my defense force."
Your Twitter army.
You know, come with Mkwanazi.
Yeah, Mkwanazi is here. With the mask.
Special task force.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
If you'll recall, we were at the forefront of the fight. I think it was in the midst of the Zuma Must Fall marches.
Yeah. Those three go-go's.
We'd gotten intelligence to say, Uguti, Guzoban is more.
Zokal.
And so what we wanted to do was, Uguti, I knew no one would hit me close, but range was an issue.
Mm.
So we had to think about it carefully. In retrospect, was it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Maybe not, because maybe nothing happened. But you know, the thing about security is you don't need it until you need it. But it certainly was something that we'd got in intelligence about saying, Wuti, info,
Zingakhala. Inkabi
ziphumile. Something.
Kunamatekisi ayi two azayo.
I suppose when nothing happens, then it's like it becomes about optics.
Of course. Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, why is he wearing a bulletproof vest? But you're right. When anybody that's doing the risk assessment or the security plan for your entry and exit and while you're there, you've got to make sure that you mitigate for every possible risk. So if you've got to wear the vest and people are going to think, what do I see? It's fine.
It is what it is.
And you'll remember, maybe about a couple of years back,
provocatively,
we'd gone to go march against COSATU.
Yeah.
And that thing turned ugly very quickly.
Mm.
And I can remember, even at that time, we got into street fights. And I never like to leave your fellow marchers on the ground.
Mm.
And so one of the problems was the procedure, and I don't want to, the procedure is, when stuff happens,
extricate yourself.
You take the principal out,
yes,
and you leave everybody behind.
That is the procedure. Yeah.
Mina, I say, so far sonke. So I often stay, and that creates a problem because now you're
also the target. You see, when we come, we're not trying to get the fellow marchers.
Yeah.
We're trying to get the principal. Hence, so you should be taken out ASAP.
Yeah. But in retrospect.
Well, you're here today, so let me start by saying thanks for the question, Zimasa. But welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Musi, my man in the building.
Sure.
He is the Ronaldo of politics because he's transferred to many teams.
he transferred value.
I'm
going
to play in Dubai, join PH.
And every team he leaves falls off.
Relegation.
That famous picture of you and Gogo standing against the wall. Do you remember that picture? You don't remember the picture with you and Gogo where I think you're up against the wall and it was, I think when you were, is it resigning or they pushed over the ledge?
I remember that picture.
Take us back to that moment when you get to the top of this political party. The numbers say things are getting better. The sentiment internally in the party is saying, because maybe he's not towing the line. Outside of telling us what's happening behind, because we're going to go there, tell us what's happening with you. As somebody who's put in so much time to get to that point, and you have to fall on a sword that ultimately you didn't craft.
Firstly, it was a crazy week and a crazy day in and of itself. You know, I'd been flying backwards and forwards between Joburg, Cape Town. I land in the morning. I have this meeting with Zille herself because she's just been elected. And I tell her, Uguti, I'm resigning.
Mm.
This is the reasons why. Ethel Trollope is sitting in the room with me. We have a backwards and forwards the whole day. We have our meeting. And then by the time we get to the press conference in the afternoon, this thing has been cooking the whole day.
Mm.
And it was cooking because the issues were South Africans were now opening up to this thing. And we knew it.
Yes.
We knew the sentiment out there. Sure, there were some Afrikaans people who had left, gone to the Freedom Front Plus.
Yeah.
But at the same time as that, the place,
you
know, when it's so toxic.
Yeah.
Mm. And it felt like the difficulty of giving up, and maybe not giving up something you love, but giving up the project that you held so dear. Mm.
Yeah. Giving up something you worth fighting.
Mm.
And you realize that the people you thought shared the same project weren't.
Mm.
Mm.
And it was difficult. It was particularly a difficult day. And I can remember as soon as I kind of said the words, I don't believe this is a vehicle that will bring the South Africa I want to see.
Yeah.
As soon as I said that line, I felt like a whole weight had lifted off my shoulder.
Yeah.
Mm. I remember we left from there with Ethel, had whiskey, because it was just one of those days.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a moment in our history. And I often think to myself, what will history reflect on that moment when all of it is written?
Yeah.
And I realized to some extent,
mm.
the story must be reflected correctly as to the fact that you got to a point exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Remember, we were pushing for change and we were working hard for change. That there was a point upon which they sent the DAs, kind of few people like Tony Leon, all of that.
Mm.
They came into my office. They said, you have to resign. I said, no, we've got to fight to bring this thing to a change. And then what happens is people then starve money into the organization.
Yeah.
Constructive.
It becomes, it's tough to work.
Yeah.
It becomes toxic. It becomes sickening. When I got to that day, I was 5 to ICU.
Yes.
That's why when I felt like having to resign brought about such great relief. I think about the day as like Freedom Day.
Yeah. Freedom Day. Do you feel like, okay, this, I suppose, because I've never been in a political party, but we get the tail end of the information in that we see the press conference part.
Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
see the week before. Yeah. We don't see the board members coming in to say you have to resign. You know, like it's like, you know, yeah. in that scene in Twilight.
Yeah.
The vampires are playing with the werewolves there. Then Sekfigalaba with the red eyes.
They're like,
then they're like,
we're the ones.
The Vaulty area here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it like that for any other? Because like you said, you feel like you're in the fight with like-minded people, with your allies. Mm. So when you're at phase one of the plan, we are together, right? And when you say, guys, I think this is the idea, this is the direction, let's operate. They're like, let's move. Phase two, we are together. Phase three, we are together. At what point do you start realizing that, wait a minute, you guys are not together? Is it like when your plan starts to take form? What, like, I don't understand, what are they fighting?
Or does someone get weird? Or does a funder like, call and say, I don't like what
opinion,
he said?
We're all pulling in the same direction because we want change.
Mm.
So what is the issue? What is the fight about? Is it because we don't want change? Or is it a difference in direction? Maybe your policies don't align with mine.
Sometimes it's change at that one's cost. Not at my cost.
I see. Okay.
Especially internally within an organization when you're dealing with a number of entrepreneurs, people feel like, hey, we're competing here for things.
Yeah.
So one of the key things that we started to want to fight for was to say, look, I'm not going to have a caucus inside the organization that is exclusively of one race.
Mm.
You just simply can't. Not in the South Africa we live in.
Mm.
We just can't. So I was quite clear that was the first battle. And then some people were like, no, for these ones to come in,
someone
of us
must move. Out, yeah.
So then they started to form a block of people to say, this one, he's the one.
They wanted to start a faction.
The second issue was, the second issue was, broadly, when you want to build an organization, particularly that wants to govern South Africa, you can't just think with a Cape Town hat only.
No, of course not.
You must think with South Africa in total.
Yes.
And Cape Town is not South Africa.
Bro, I think actually Cape Town is probably, you'd rather think with a Bloemfontein hat and you'd get further.
Yeah.
A Johannesburg hat, get further. A Durban hat even. But I think a Cape Town hat is so far removed from the rest of the country.
And so the language then is a consideration. You have to go out of your way and say, I'm not here to pursue Afrikaans voters, not that they don't matter.
South African voters.
I'm here to pursue South African voters and work with South Africans, black, white, Indian, colored, who believe that stuff.
Yeah.
So we worked hard towards that achieving that goal. And I think that's what I believe the project was. Until you realize that it would step on some people's interests.
Mm.
Until you realize that for some people, this was about them.
Yeah.
It wasn't about country.
Mm.
And then they begin making your life. Because I had incredible favor with the South African public. The public were on my side. I think even within the party itself, we would have won the Congress. But the price that we would have had to pay, you would have won, if you like, the battle. But the internal war
you'd have lost.
Would have been something that's chronic. You would have starved the organizations of donors because the institution, you've got certain institutional people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who
go
knew
and
the
fetch
donors.
The money.
Yeah. They go phone the people. And I was raising a lot of the money.
Yes.
There hasn't, you know, I was privileged enough to say that when we worked, we raised a significant amount of money because money follows the idea that this can bring a change possibility. Mm.
Yeah.
Money follows what's going
to
work.
Correct. And then people started saying things like, no, let's starve him of money. Start to brief people wrong things.
Yeah.
Then you deploy the media to become your enemy. So you are arriving and suddenly the only conversations you are having are internal, not talking to your strength, which is the people.
Yeah.
So in essence, it became either you fight for the people and go stand with the people, or sit inside, be complicit and say, well, for the next 5 years, I'm just going to exist to go fetch the Afrikaans voters we lost. And I wasn't thinking that was what I wanted to give my life.
Use of your time.
Why do you think there was a clash in the messaging that you were pushing and what the Afrikaans voters at that time wanted from a party like the Democratic Alliance?
I think the same issues have always been. If you think about even our conflict now, in some instances with the US,
yeah,
there are some groups, Afrikaans groups, mm. that have ended up in the US to peddle information that all of us know inherently isn't yeah. genuinely true.
To pick the wrong side.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. So when we were working in this issue,
mm.
the idea of saying, and it's extremes on either end. Yeah. When you want to work with all South Africans, there are some Afrikaners who will wake up and say, no, ngengspan nabotaki. No, you guys are your hopes yeah. are my fears.
Yes.
If you hope for land,
yes, yes.
you're creating a fear for me.
Yeah. Same situation yes. like you, do you know what I mean? The party. Yeah. Yeah.
So
if we implement this, there's a winner and a loser.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you also get black South Africans who say, you guys were the perpetuators of apartheid.
Mm. Yeah.
Therefore, we're not going to work with you.
Yeah.
So then you've got extremes who want to move out in one way.
Yeah.
Mm.
For that same dichotomy of hopes and fears. And in the middle, you've got the majority of people in this yeah. country who actually mm. want a non-racial society. They want to understand that it's important for us to care for the poor, yeah. but they also want to be left alone to make their money.
Yeah.
You know, all of that.
Yeah.
Those were the people I wanted to work with. The difficulty is, inside the caucus that I'd inherited, some of it had mergers with the National Party, some of it had that. You had some of these guys who then said, for me to manage my constituency and tell them that this DA
will
is
do
still
what,
theirs, yeah. I must now create tension inside yeah. the organization that mm-hmm. said, no, we are going to preserve X, Y, and Z. We are mm-hmm. not going to be progressive. We are yeah. not going to do all of those things. And I think we started to... That cohort of people
mm.
at the time were hearing messages coming from me that says, I actually want a DA that works for everybody. I want a diverse organization. Yeah. I want a South Africa that works for all.
Mm. Yeah, but
and they didn't see themselves within that.
Yeah.
And then went to a party. It wasn't ideological. People write it and say, it was ideology. It wasn't. Yeah. They went back to the Freedom Front Plus because they said, the Freedom Front Plus is for ons.
Yeah, it, yeah.
it
represents us.
Okay. Because I was going to say, then, you know, the party outwardly says the same thing. They say we want a non-racial society, and. But you're saying internally,
yeah.
that's not the tunes, you see.
It genuinely became harder mm. and harder to work through. And I think sometimes people feel like inside a political party, you've got many interests and you will have enemies. There's no denial about
yeah.
that. But you have to be willing to say to yourself, the ideals of non-racialism are so important to fight for. There were people, I remember fighting to amend the constitution of the party to say, I want to include the fourth value, which is the value of diversity.
Mm.
Yo, Chita.
Big thing.
There were people who were like, why do we want to include diversity? I said, because I never want the DA to be a party just for blacks or for whites or yeah. for, it has to be a party for all South Africans because we occupy that space.
Yeah.
But there were people who were like, no, we'll never have that value. They started to write, they weaponized the media. You know, that period, I remember people writing open letters into newspapers and mm. leaking them anonymously. And in an organization, when you're working, and suddenly you want to convince people, mm. citizens do not respond well to the idea that says, this is a party in internal war.
Mm.
Just it puts people off.
Mm. Yeah.
And the second thing is, when you are inside the organization, the last place you want to be is to create a federation of races mm. where you say there's a black caucus, there's a white caucus, there's mm. an Indian caucus, there's a colored caucus. Because mm. when you create that, you socialize society into believing ukuthi only blacks can represent blacks and only whites can represent whites.
Yeah.
And once you live in that dictum, you end up in a space where ultimately people then, you lager people into their racial groups and you formulate, you make politics
yeah.
become about demography
yeah.
and you make demography destiny
mm.
and you can't do that because eventually when people have to vote for people in a conference, yeah, you don't want to say, hey, the blacks are voting for the black one.
Black guy,
and yeah, the whites must vote for the white one. Then already just by sheer demographics and numbers, we know the electoral outcome. And when you do that in the country and you have black parties, colored parties, Zulu parties, religious parties, all of that, I don't think it helps the ideals and the fight you want to put for.
Okay.
I come from the dictum that says, listen, Chita, I don't have to be a woman to fight for women. Therefore, I must be conscious about what are the issues that women are going through so that when I stand up and fight, they know, Uti, even though we don't have the same gender, I'm willing to stand up and fight for them.
Yes. But now, do you not feel, I feel like that, just on the example you just made, I feel like it's gotten worse. I feel like a lot of parties play into that because it benefits them.
Absolutely.
Yes. So that's not getting any better.
And what's painful,
from where I'm sitting,
what's painful, this is the pain. When you take the ballot paper, it really is not helpful if you say, okay, now we're going to ANC, that's for blacks. The DA, that's for English whites. The Freedom Front Plus, that's for Afrikaners.
Yeah.
The PA, that's for colors. ACDP, that's for Christians. So eventually then, let's not have an election.
Yeah, there's a Muslim party.
Yes, let's take the census and say, okay, here's the census results.
Yeah.
Here are the election results. Because that's not helpful.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, I always say to people, when you are, when let's say you work here.
Yeah.
When you leave here, I'm going to put a restraint of trade to say our trade secrets you can't take away.
Yeah.
But when I left and started Build One South Africa, no one said, that's an idea that was born in here. No. They said, go with that idea of yours of One South Africa.
Yeah.
It doesn't sit here.
Yeah.
We will remain what we are.
In fact, take us into the bones of what it takes to build a party in South Africa. What does it take? So that moment you've now left.
Money, boss.
No. I know it's there, but how do you then, do you take the idea to funders, to people? And ultimately, I want you to also answer the conversation and the question that around money in our politics, because it needs money. And I think a lot of people, they get this thing wrong, like, it costs money, lots of money to print posters, and then you can't pay for stuff. But other than that, when you left and you had this idea and you had this dictum and you had this ethos and you had this vision that couldn't be realized where you were, and you took that little bit of garden leave that you took, and then you said, you know what, I need to start this. Where do you even start?
Firstly, I mean, let's not downplay the garden leave, because I think many of the parties that have been started are factions of their former homes.
Yeah.
And I can say that without fear of contradiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Abu, they are.
They took.
Yes.
They annexed certain sections
of the thing.
They copied
and pasted constitutions
and then took
and
exactly and then left. So I spent 4 years doing two things. I said, one, I'll go study.
Yeah.
Because politics is about being on the treadmill. Sometimes you don't have time to think.
Yeah.
So I did a PhD in the time. Think about the economy of this country.
Let's go.
Nengi push as well.
I'm a doctor.
No, but the second thing I went to do is to say, we amended the Electoral Act to say, let's go out and find constituency-based metal.
Yeah.
Remember we won that court case?
I remember.
And then that forced the independents to come through, all of that. The reason for doing that is because I thought, one of the flaws of our democracy at the moment is that it's become captured by the elites.
Yeah,
big time.
The elites do a few things. One, they protect their interests, but they privatize certain issues of morality and then capture democracy for their specific purposes.
Yeah.
So we go to the citizens, the masses, for the votes.
Yeah.
But effectively,
the mandate.
Government sits with the elites. So I said, how do we invert that process? And we made some mistakes, boss. I won't lie. It wasn't a straightforward issue because we went into communities, we identified people. And if anyone, genuinely, you speak to any political leader, there is one number one lie in any political environment. People wake up, they come to you and say, ah, chief, I've got numbers. That's the number one lie.
Because
you're going to kiss lots of frogs.
Yeah.
Or it's like starting a Shebeen and then the people who left, who got kicked out of the other one, they are the first ones who are right.
Yeah.
So you've got to... spend
that
quite.
Is so true.
they pitch that.
Mama Mia Nkaza, they don't want you anymore. What's that? They'll take you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you've got to work through sifting through all of that.
Otherwise, you end up with the brown mukhozi.
Hey, Wabon. Hey, that's a sensitive one. That
next thing, he's on the news and he's taking out files. That was with Muzi the boss. Muzi's my
No,
brother.
He knows.
No,
he knows.
No.
You know,
Muzi's
fortunately,
like,
I can say, I don't know Bran Mohodes.
Yeah, he probably knows you.
But literally, we went and we worked with constituency, we worked with civil society organizations.
Mm.
We supported independence, and so it gave us a platform upon which to build from.
Yeah.
The difficulty with that is that we maybe didn't organize them into one unitary brand, which is what we should have done. Because I wanted to build the Uber of politics, to say
decentralized.
Uber doesn't own the cars, but it owns the platform.
Yes.
And so we wanted to own the platform and license it to the cars. But the mistake we made is we allowed too many platforms to operate. And so when the elections came through, some of the people went up.
They took
and
their...
Took.
Yeah.
Bolt, went, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that's what it takes. It takes you actually doing the streets, consulting, etc.
Mm.
But you've also got to run it. So an election needs to come around. Then you need to see whether it works or not. Then you see, like you're saying... Sure. Too many branches of Uber, man. You said, but that's a map, whatever. Now you learn from that, and then suppose it's on to the next one. Because my thing is, how long? I feel like people also expect, and this is the most of us consume most of the news that we do on social media.
Yeah.
Right? So because it's instant, we're hearing, okay, Musi Maimane started a new party. Now, what it creates is it's like, okay, Pulled One South Africa is now into the fight. Mm. We don't see the behind-the-scenes work. We don't see what you're doing. We then see whatever the showing is in the elections, and then we're like, ah, look at this one now. We expected him to get more. Why did he leave the DA?
Yeah.
Or people say shit like Zim opened the show with. They'll be like, ah, this one, he thinks he's white. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's that whole chat which I think distracts from a very clear message. Mm. You know what I mean? A very clear message, a very sensible message, one that... I'm sure we can all attest, we can all agree, we'd like to see implemented.
Yeah.
But you're fighting that fight as well on the social media streets.
And when you head towards an election, remember, elections are every 5 years.
Yes.
The difficulty is that voters sometimes, in the period in between, think far less about politics.
Yeah.
In fact, you want people to think less about politics.
Yes.
Otherwise,
if at all.
If they're obsessed about politics, it means society isn't normalized.
It's not functional.
In other words, things are... You're one of ones every day, you're thinking, hey, these ones are corrupt, there's money, there's problems, there's this. And I think South Africa is in that space. We are overly obsessed about politics. But the dilemma is 5 years is a period upon which you reintroduce yourself to voters.
Mm.
One of the things we had to face off with now, given the fact that in that COVID election, we were all locked away. If you'll remember the first local government election.
Yes, we weren't out in the streets.
And then the 2024 elections was the first time people said, oh, that guy. And exactly what's happened here today, in some ways, and sure, colors don't help.
Yeah.
The starting point we want to talk about is to say...
It was my next question.
Let's talk about the DA.
That thing.
Yeah.
Whereas... The last time I left the DA office was in 2019.
Yeah.
So it feels at times a bit like it's the same for voters.
Mm.
Voters also have to say, I used to bump into guys that used to say, Marno, you're still with the DA. No, and then someone says, no, but here's the poster. It says he's no longer with the DA. Mm. And then you've got that.
It happens, bro. People come to me and they're like, ah, my man, you're on Y.
YFM.
Yeah, exactly. On YFM. And then I'm like, 10, no, nigga, not for 10 years, but okay. You know what I mean?
So you've got to...
You've got to rebrand.
You don't have enough elections to keep trying to reiterate.
I understand
the point over and over again. But I think
that makes sense.
I think more and more people are kind of going,
turning.
That chapter of my life is done, and I have no qualms with the DA. Maybe that's why I could wear blue.
Yeah,
but I genuinely have no like.
Yeah, was it?
I don't have an ugly split. Issue. You know, people. I don't have this sort of. I see those people. There might be one or two of them that might be sitting in that space, but I'm beyond
that faction.
Is
that why they started to take out stories around the funding, the car, Steinhoff, that type of stuff? Is that the machinery?
The horror of September.
People
got together and started to mobilize against you to make your life miserable. Because when people can't win fair, they have to play dirty.
Yeah.
And it was weird, like, man.
But do they all play from the same playbook, Musi? Because the same thing's happening to Paul Mashatile.
No. But they are on top of him.
But wait, it comes like you, what did you call it? The September.
That's September.
Right? Becky, it's almost like it's September, so obvious that it's like, okay, so you're telling me this man that we've been seeing for 10 years,
yeah,
there's your guy, there's been your guy, and now that there's an issue, all of a sudden, I'm shying the media. Hey, Tories, I got 3 years back, four years back.
But yeah, Motai driver.
Yeah.
But we were all together
not
fundraising.
Even them auto. Yeah, or the previous one, before this one, that one as well. It becomes like very obvious, I think, to the thinking public that this is an attack. It's a character assassination, if you will, to discredit you because you are moving in a different direction to the faction.
Look, I mean,
it's not to say, just to qualify my Paul Mashatile statement, it's not, I'm not condemning him, I'm not supporting him. I'm just saying, it's a little bit, from a timing perspective, it's like, oh, okay, geez, like 10 articles about one guy in a month, we've heard nothing for 5 years, you know?
When I read certain news publications, I think, I'm sure there's a Madlanga commission, but you want to run a Paul commission, keep going.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just feels that way. That's one component of it. Remember, at the end of the day, regardless of it all, you're still a human being.
Yeah.
I have to go home and explain to my kids, but
what's going on there?
They said X, Y, and Z. I have to explain to my wife, this is the story they're trying to.
Yeah.
I used to have Friday afternoons where there was one journalist they used, and he would send me questions, and I knew
there's an agenda.
They've been cooked inside.
It's their guy.
It's planted.
Too specific.
Yeah.
This guy knows what he knows. I'll never forget. They tried to link me to Marcus Uster so closely.
Yeah, with the whole Steinhoff
brewery. Yeah.
And man, you know, when I was doing fundraising at the time, I didn't know Steinhoff much in that sense. All the revelations of Steinhoff have come post facto. I knew the organization. I knew many organizations.
Yeah.
I knew CEOs. We used to write. And they used to make contributions of any kind.
Yeah.
Which
but also,
of
I think Steinhoff, it's like, yes, okay, obviously, with the gift of hindsight, we now know the Steinhoff story. So
correct.
When we say Steinhoff, it's a bad word.
But going
Steinhoff,
into it,
used to be Steinhoff.
Second largest furniture business on the planet.
Yes.
You know
if something
mean?
Like that comes out now about Naspers, you'd
be like, exactly.
But right now, today, when we're speaking about Naspers, you know?
So then, what used to happen is that I used to write thank you letters, and I used to sign thousands of these things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you used to find certain CEOs, like you do Christmas.
Yeah.
People would send you things and send you
gift
things, and they'd send you like, and I declare all of that stuff.
Yeah. Nice life. They send you cars.
And then I remember, I think it was Marcus said he'd sent me, like, a bottle of wine because they used to own a wine estate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Signed it, Marcus. So this thing arrives in my office. It's December. I don't even care. Nyavaya. Someone comes into my office, takes a picture of this note, sends it to the journalist, says to the journalist, Iskim's got Marcus.
But
same vibe. I get a question. So apparently you and Marcus are tight. What?
Yeah.
I met the guy a couple of times.
With other people in the room.
Exactly. You know, if I told you the story about the car, you'd laugh because, in fact, I do need to tell you. I'm going with the current mayor of Cape Town.
Yeah.
We go do fundraising. Now
the current,
now
2025.
Yeah, we're going.
Jordan.
We're going to
Gordon.
To Steinhoff.
Jordan?
The problem is Jordan.
Jordan Hill with the G.
The problem is, I'd landed in Joburg, and when I arrived in Cape Town, it was raining.
Yeah.
So he picks me up in his car, and we drive. Now, if you go to the then Steinhoff offices, they had this double-story building with glass panels in the front. So we park Lapa at the front. I come out. I'm the leader. He's working in my office. I never did fundraising.
Oh, he wasn't mayor.
He wasn't mayor at the
you
time.
You can't
he
because
was.
The promises you make in the room.
Correct.
Need,
someone
to
has
be,
to.
Someone has to. Yeah.
We go up to the second floor. I do the pitch. I'm talking. We agree. Wada. They say no. They're gonna have a board meeting to think about it, and then they go. We come back outside. Jordan had left his lights on.
Yeah.
So the car can't start.
Mm. Yeah.
So we have a problem. He now has to drive, and I have to push. So inside the boardroom, the Dakis is in charge.
Like,
outside the boardroom, the white guy's in the steering wheel and I have to push the car. These guys are coming down the stairs and saying, oh, Gatuguje.
It's the parking lot. It's the parking lot moment after he pitched for
business. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah, what guy is what I seen?
That was the fundamental reason. Yeah. They eventually said, guy, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Let's organize a car for your party. We don't want to even talk for you.
Yeah.
We'll give it to the party because clearly there's a problem here. And that's how we got the car story to start off with.
Yeah.
It was a donation to the party because I had to push it outside Sino. I had to push the black guy.
But yo, illegally.
We have one of things.
Like and there was literally. Like, so,
so now you've built the platform, Build One South Africa. You've kind of got it going. You've made some wins. You've made some errors. You're starting to understand where things are lying. You're now moving towards understanding the landscape of where you guys need to fit in. And then we get this moment where you are now in parliament and you start to realize, or we start to realize, that parliament is too fractured. We realized it. We realized it during last year, budgets, everything. We start to realize, no, man, State of the Nation address, we're like, we as the voters might have effed this up. There's too many people.
Yeah.
And nobody is able to command any loud voice enough for me as a voter to feel like if I voted for you, I'd... So now, parties have to come together in order to create real traction around issues. Give us a view of how in parliament those inter-party conversations work to either be for or against something. Because when the VAT issue came, there was a lot of confusion from a whole lot of people. So we want to know, behind the scenes, when you guys use the whips, when you guys are talking and you're caucusing together, what is the mood like? Because you've now given us a
you
view of...
You guys seem to hate each other.
Yeah, like, but then they'll band together on certain issues, and on other issues you're not bras.
It's one of these. We're living in
interesting times.
As President Zuma would say, funny democracy. Because, firstly, in any democracy, it's a bit weird that your official opposition joins the government. You know, like,
pretty weird.
You think about Labour
yeah.
suddenly deciding, okay, we don't have a majority, we're going to join the Conservatives.
Yes, yeah. And so bring the Tories in as well.
Let's say, no, let's just join the Republicans and make one big jamboree. So we're sitting in a government that's got 70% at the moment mandate. So effectively, the GNU could amend the constitution, do what they like, actually.
But how? Because they don't align on anything.
You know, so but there isn't an organizing mission because at the moment it was the ANC saying, we run an employment agency here.
Yes.
We will employ you and give you blue lights. You work with us.
Yeah.
We will employ you and give you social grants. You can stay at home. We will employ you and you will work
we'll
for the state.
We'll add more deputy ministers. Yes, yes.
That's how the world
is. And we will something
you know
of
what
us.
I mean? Like,
and we will create a consumption economy and the money will come
correct,
from the sky.
Correct. Yeah. So the dictum of the ANC itself formulated this thing.
Now it is quite prevalent, actually. That's a very good point.
You know, and now you've got this, there's no new economic plan. I chair the budget committee, so the budget has remained the same. It's literally exactly the same. It hasn't changed. I can tell you now, I can see the expenditure priorities. Don't tell me what your ideology is. Show me your budget. I'll tell you
what you are going to put the money in.
So that was the first. The second issue is, we then chose to stay out of the GNU because I said, we've got to be a constructive opposition. You can't just leave the 70% now to do whatever they like.
Yeah.
Even if there's few of you, best you put up an alternative voice.
Yes, there needs to be an opposition of some sort. Yeah.
Then, when it came to the budget, and that was a very difficult moment because people frame it as the question that said, do you want VAT or no VAT?
Yeah, what about everything else? What about every other line item?
My issue was, do you want a budget or not a budget? And can you amend it afterwards? I said, I want a budget and I can amend it, which we did. But the difficulty at the time was then in the intra fights between the DA and the ANC, it became quite clear that if no one became responsible about what needs to happen in the country, you were going to have two elephants fighting internally, and the citizens would suffer. So the movie that I was looking at the time was that if we didn't pass the budget in March, we would then go to 45% expenditure. If we didn't pass it in July, we would then go to 10% expenditure. So if you are sitting in that situation...
10% expenditure, what does that mean?
What I mean by that is that if the police budget is 100%, if you don't pass it at the start of the year, it goes to 45%, and then it eventually goes to 10%.
Oh, I see. It.
Which means...
By August, there's no money in the police.
In other words, you can only spend 10%. With the police budget, 81% of it is hiring policemen.
Yeah.
So which ones are you going to let go and say you're not paying?
And there isn't enough as it is.
It becomes a different version of a budget shutdown, which is what the U.S. is going to do now.
Yes.
This is just back as the version says...
You start to scale back on
exactly,
costs.
On what you can spend. So it became quite clear that that was the issue that we're facing up to. So we had to work with people to say, how do we ensure? And in that instance, the maturity was even to reach out to the ANC, to reach out to the GNU partners to say, guys, be responsible here. Because if South Africa doesn't pass a budget, it will signal to the world
catastrophic.
That the politics are unstable, the government is unstable, this is what happens. So we had to do something. So that was on that instance. But on other issues, we don't agree. We genuinely... And the lesson I take from my previous role now, guys, I want to lead this country. Leading this country is leading this country clear in your head about its contradictions. Because South Africa has got its contradictions.
Yeah.
It's got its complexities. You have to, as a leader, know how to manage those sides. And sometimes it can feel as though you are being pragmatic in the middle and all of that. But in truth, you have to say to yourself, you know, I don't like what the ANC is doing here, but they may have a point there, so let's incorporate that. I don't maybe necessarily agree with where the DA is.
It's a trade-off.
Yeah.
How do we accommodate
but
this?
But a decision has to be made.
We have to put the country's interest first. Because citizens, if there's anything that puts people off, is when all... Because people are not sitting at home working out what appropriations is, what the fiscal framework is.
No.
Those things don't matter to people.
We worried that there hasn't been water for 6 days in Marshalltown.
And that's all people want.
Yes.
And therefore, be responsible and do the right thing.
I want to pick up on two of your answers from earlier, right? I found it interesting, like the Marcus Huerta thing, like in terms of the donors, you know, you sit at your desk and you sign 1,000 letters a day. Because someone might be donating 50 rand. Someone might be donating
50,000.
Someone can be donating 1 million, but they all get a thank you letter, right? There's a contentious issue of the CR17 bank statements.
Yeah.
And those were sealed, right? He's said that he doesn't have anything to do with that. Like in terms of, hey, yo, I don't know who was donating, fam. Me, I just signed the thank you letters. So I'm asking Uti, Imal's Gaba and Isla. It's not my thing. And it's been sealed for I don't even know what reason. I've lost track. There also becomes, like you said, we've just got this overstimulation, too much information. This whole place is just such a cluster. You understand what I'm saying? That you lose track of very important stories and very important answers that then come back and you're like, teeny. Right? From what you've said now, could there be some truth to what he's saying? Right? Because that is a very big issue, and it's been an issue now for 8 years, in that there are no clear answers on where the funding came from. There are no clear answers. And never mind clear, it's like it's actively being hidden.
Maybe transparency is
So transparency is not even on the table. But shouldn't political parties be transparent? It's like you're saying, yo, I was pushing the car. The man gave us a car. He can give us a car, and we're entitled to take donations because we declare them.
Yeah.
If this man has got bank statements showing who funded him, what is the issue with saying, oh, I was funded now, Uzimasa. So where's the issue there? Like, perhaps I'm not understanding it because I'm a citizen.
No, I think it's
foul play.
On the merits of the case itself, firstly, I don't think anyone can sit behind and say, I did not know. I knew who was donating to the DA. I think it just would be disingenuous to say no. I knew that car was donated to the party, therefore this is the value.
Yes.
You, So that's the first. So you can't, even not if no. I sign so many of these things, the reality of it is that the information is readily available if you want it.
Mm.
Because at the same time as that, you must be able to say in future when somebody says to you, Brian Mokgotsi gave you money, I can stand up and say, no, he didn't. Because I know categorically he did or he didn't.
Yeah. Mm.
And so where I think he's being, the law, we were talking earlier on yeah. about some of the difficulties of the law. Personal campaign finance
mm-hmm.
has not been something that's been given the appropriate legal prescribes as to how you manage it mm-hmm. in a way that it should. We can all accept the yeah. principle that says it should be transparent,
mm.
but the law hasn't caught up to that principle. So you have party campaign finance,
yeah.
which has to be declared. But when you are campaigning inside the organization, because you'll remember that money wasn't for the ANC's the campaign.
No, 100%.
It was for the internal campaign.
Yeah, it was for the CR17 campaign.
That has not been clarified mm. as to how you then manage, especially because when you've got someone who can have billions, the other question you should put on the table is, why aren't you funding your own campaign?
Yes.
And that could be an easy declaration to make. I paid for my campaign. Here's the
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
And it's money that, remember, I'm a businessman.
Correct. For 30 correct, years, so. Correct. Correct. My interest in the issue was far less about who.
Yeah.
It was more about for what.
Mm. In exchange for what? Or for what right now?
Because you can't stand up and say, I mean, I'm going to remove corruption.
Yeah,
but in order to accrue votes, the quantum was close to about 300, 400 million.
Million.
There are 4,000 delegates to conference. So I don't know what the mathematics are, but surely if you split 400 million with 4,000 delegates.
It's about 10 grand each.
You can give people money to vote.
Mm. And you don't need to give all 4,000.
You understand? You just need 51%.
That's it.
And I think...
Is that
already
even legal?
That is a problem. Because
yeah.
once you've done that, you've introduced into the organization that votes can be bought, therefore corruption is ordered.
Yes, yes. The therefore, precedent
how
that
do you
says.
How do you hope to fight it anywhere else? Because uzothima ufika la ngithi no maru usgaye 50 now ukuthi sikuvotele.
Yeah.
So sicela something nat. We need something extra.
Mm. Yeah.
So for me that was the bigger interest rather than I get that the who question is important because yeah. I think for citizens, they go, I even get that question today. So-and-so gave you money,
yeah.
therefore they are determining your policy. Mm. That's not true.
Yeah.
But it can
be true. If I give you 100 bars, you know, I don't know, you know, Sizwe Mpofu Walsh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had Koko Aubrey Mashitu on his podcast. And mm. I like Koko Aubrey. I like Caesar's podcast.
I know
right?
you like Koko. You've mentioned
yeah,
him twice
Koko.
Now
yeah.
when I've been around.
I think I told you guys the last time, but I'll share it for Musi because it's just us. Right?
It's just us.
Bra Aubrey tells a story. I won't go into the details of it, but he calls the character in the story Bra Sox. Mm. Right? And he's like, no, Bra Sox was our guy. So when we were fighting an armed struggle, Bra Sox was a guy who had trafficking roots in and out of the country for the stuff that Bra Sox was moving, you know? And because we were undercover Owens, we were moving with underworld Owens because we needed to get guns in to fight our struggle. Mm. So when we went to Bra Sox, we were like, yo, we need those channels that you have across the border mm. and under the fence and through the river and whatever Bra Sox is using.
Mm.
Because we're fighting this armed struggle and we got to liberate our people, bro. And Bra Sox was like, yo, I'm about that. Let's go.
Mm.
Didn't charge us any money. He just mm. let us use his roots, and we managed to bring our guns in and managed to bring our bombs in and whatever we're bringing in. And we could now arm
we could
MK.
Operate.
We could operate, right? But we win the struggle. We get into power. We're now inside 1 or 2 years. And then like in 1996, you know, there's a dinner or there's a whatever
Bra Sox
being hosted
says.
And Bra Sox is there. And he's like, ah, oh. Musi. And you're like, hey, Bra Sox.
My
and he's
man.
Like, hey, Yazin, don't I am. Bridge. It's a thing I have there coming in. I need you to tell Uzimasa Uguti.
Look the other way.
Look the other way.
Mm.
Now, what do you do now? Because Bra Sox is your guy.
And mm. he's been operating.
Yes. Mm. And if it wasn't for Bra Sox, a lot of stuff wouldn't have come in.
Mm.
So now you're like, okay, no problem, Bra Sox. Mm. So Prasox brings this one thing in at that time. It's 2025 now. Prasox has got many more roots and he's brought in many more things. And nobody tells Prasox anything because he's our
and he's
guy
on top. He's on top of the big five on that diagram.
You understand what I'm saying on the diagram? Now we have a problem because that is not putting the people first. That is
putting Prasox first.
Putting Prasox first because Prasox is not doing it for us, for himself.
Prasox is looking after us. He's got an enterprise.
You understand? And when I get into the position or the job where I'm the one looking the other way, Prasox is looking after me. I'm nice. I'm getting cars. I'm getting things. I'm getting doulas.
I get how that can happen.
Mm.
And you can follow the same logic eventually when people say, Chita, we did not fight the struggle to be poor.
Yeah. You see, because now those are the conversations need, that are happening. We need stuff.
We need workmen's compensation. Yeah. We worked, see. Now compensate.
Mm.
I get that logic. The dilemma is, when you assume, for me, what defines great leadership?
Mm.
A good leader identifies an enemy and fights. A great leader confronts their followers for the interest of the greater good.
Mm.
Good leaders will say, no, of course we must honor Prasox.
Mm.
No, what I was saying is, you know, I think the decent job of leadership is to say, here's who where we're advancing and off we go. Greatness is being able to turn and look at your own people and say, in the interest of the greatest good,
mm.
I have to challenge this within the organization.
Mm.
And there are minor examples of this. Typically, we all can, at the top of our head, think of Mandela and the Springboks.
Mm.
At the time, there were people who were saying, but this is a white spot. Why are you doing this thing?
Yeah.
And yet he had the greatness to go, actually, wait, hold on. It's important that we had put the Springboks. Mandela was summoned to court and found against in court.
Mm. Mm.
There were many people who advised to say, don't go, Dada, don't go to court, don't go.
Mm.
You are now the president, you must be above. He said, no one should be above the law, so I'm going to confront my own structures, go to court
mm.
and deal with constitutionality. Otherwise, it'll never be an established value in the country. Successfully, post that, particularly at the helm by President Zuma. I'm not saying it didn't start, but what you started to create the impression in civil service was that your actual job is the side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Your real one is to make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Home Affairs official then sees the president running a part-time job of being the president, but the main reason is self-enrichment. Comes to the Home Affairs and says, actually, when the system is down, I make more money here because mm. I can come to Musi outside there and say, Nzoka something, Nkai something, mm. I'll expedite the process. Mm.
Come back
tomorrow. So effectively, the state became the side hustle, the work became the work.
Mm. The state funds became the work.
We have had no leadership that was then willing to say,
face
in
the
interest of the whole, I'm going to challenge you first, mm. my people first. Because once the ANC, which happens to all liberation movements,
mm,
created an expansion of the state as a feature of itself,
mm-hmm.
so that if you are a comrade, you must come work for us in government, etc., etc.
And we give you blue lights and we give you...
We then, you create the culture that says, I'll never confront these people because they are the ones... And it is the tough job of political leadership, actually, because if you run a corporate, the people you hire, you fire.
Mm.
In politics, the people who hire you can fire you. The mm. people you hire can fire you.
Yeah. Mm.
So then poor leadership, particularly in the public space, and it's not just unique in parliament, it happens everywhere else, fails the basic task of sometimes turning and saying, Yazinbab, it's principle before comradeship.
Mm.
And I remember having this exact conversation with President Mbeki, where he was confronted with people who were phoning him and saying, and he was saying, there's allegations here.
Mm.
And the question became louder. But we are comrades, Chief. We fought the struggle together.
Mm.
Surely you can't implement
mm.
what should be the natural course of mm. the law. So up until we create a context upon which you no longer are dealing with people who can say comradeship first, South Africa will always have a corruption problem.
Mm-hmm. So just jumping into that, UFC, not the fighting, but Unite for Change, that happened on social
media. Yo, UFC was right there, dog. I should have gone with UFC. I was like, UFC, that's
yeah,
dope.
Yeah, it does.
And then they were like,
I'm
no,
with it.
The Rise Mzansi handle replied to the tweet and said, it's not UFC, it's Unite. And I was like, it's UFC, fam.
Collapse all of the communication structures into one office and tell them, this is the matching line. Mm. But with all of the things that we've been talking about and the fractious nature of South African politics and the continued fractious nature, you guys have now said, look, we want to conglomerate. We believe we've got similar ideals. We kind of are going in a direction that we're agreeing on the direction that we need to go. First thing I want to say to that is that it actually takes maturity, because in South Africa, everyone wants a fiefdom. Everyone wants, like, there's too many chiefs, not enough Indians, right? And you guys have said, we want to jump in together. Is that because you've seen the gap? And I mean, I love numbers. I go into the numbers and I geek out on the stuff. There's a huge gap in South Africa for something else and an alternative change. But is that why you guys have decided that, look, it's too fractured. We've got to bring it together. We've got to create something of real value that can push in a proper direction that people can see mass, because you already have a base. Remember, one of the things that I spoke about, I don't know if it was Ofe, I said, you can't win anything in South African politics without a base. Mm. Like, you can have all the nice things, mainstream media can like shout about you, but if we don't see your base, that's why stadiumology, even though I think it's an archaic concept, it still makes sense for moments to show other people that you're not alone, that there are other people who managed to go to the stadium to listen to this message, which I think it takes too long, should be 3 hours, we're out. But give me an idea of why. The why.
For the reasons you've alluded to, South Africans actually want something that is bigger, that can give them an alternative, that can, for the majority to work together.
Mm.
But the other big why for me is generational.
Mm.
You know, sometimes when I go to Parliament, and I'm not being ageist, but there is a point at which you must sit and listen to the ideas and say,
mm.
That's a genuine, they are busy discussing VHS, Tina's busy with AI.
Yeah.
Mm. You can feel, Uguti, we're not heading somewhere. So that's the first instance. So there's a generational sense upon which you want to attract younger voters to come through. The third is, to the point I was making earlier, once democracy only resides within the elite in parliament, who automatically become elite by virtue of what they earn sometimes.
Yeah, they're all top 1%.
When you lose the sense upon which actually, on the ground, let the people come, councillors, candidates, all of that. So you change how the thing is governed, but you'll change who governs the thing. And there's obviously another thing, which is local government has a pragmatic reason.
Yeah.
You know, wherever you live, surely the problems in your area are not greater than the number of candidates on the ballot. Surely. And if local government is local government, the debate is not, it's like washing dishes, you know. The debate is not left or right hand, left or right. The debate is put your hands together and wash the dishes.
Just wash.
Fix the potholes. Get the water going. Keep the lights on. Make sure the police are there. That's local government. So how many people who say those things do you want on the ballot exactly? Other than trying to hark back to the earlier question, which is, I'm here because I'm Zulu. And the other person is here because I'm black. Or this one is Afrikaans.
Not the issues on the ground.
So what we're trying to say is to say, for pragmatic reasons, if there was an election and 50 voters showed up, and Rise, Bossa, Good were standing on the ballot. And let's say an independent and MK. You could have 10, 10, 10. This independent gets 12 and then MK gets 14 or whatever the mathematics are. Naturally, the one who got 12 wins, but they didn't have the majority, let's be fair. Whereas if these first three had got together, they could have got 20 or 30 to win the thing. So to me, there's a pragmatic pre-coalition conversation that must occur even within a ballot paper.
Yeah.
To say, lessen the ballot paper, make the issues,
yeah,
so that people are arriving and saying, okay, we can unite, we can focus on the idea of change, but we can invite the candidate who comes from our community in a platform that works. So there has to be new, because if you don't have new, you end up rewarding your historic structures. You say, yeah, but my branch chairperson, he must be the one who must be the mayor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why you get mafias. That's why you get Alex Mafia. You get the Pretoria Mafia. You get the whatnot. Because ultimately, through the structures that you've created, you want to pull up your people specifically. Correct. Because of the identity politics that exist in South Africa. Now, I want to actually dovetail that into what's going on now with the Matlanga Commission. We now find ourselves in a position in South Africa where a lot of people are shocked and dismayed, and we've got another commission.
But we are not shocked.
We are not shocked. We are not dismayed. We always knew. We always. But
are
we
you shocked?
We are. We'd never connected. We'd never connected what was going on.
There's no way this man is shocked.
That's why I didn't want a commission. I was one. I said,
take it to court.
We don't need a commission.
Take it to court.
Get the WhatsApp. Get the SIU. Hit the people.
Take it to court. Now, what is happening is exactly what we're speaking about in terms of the Prasox conversation with regards to the Matlanga Commission. We now find ourselves in South Africa with the realization, and I hope people have realized this, with the realization that the criminality that we perceived to a lesser degree to be involved in our politics and in our social way of life actually has much more of a bearing on how things operate in this country. Now, if that is the case, how do you move forward? Because I tried to move forward post the Matlanga Commission and saying, okay, if these things happen and people go to jail, the infrastructure that was created by the criminal cartels still exists. Whether you're in Mexico, Colombia, or whatever, you can take out the boss, but the structure remains. They will pick a new boss.
There'll be a new Prasok.
So now the conversation has to be a bigger conversation. What do you think should happen post the Matlanga Commission from an infrastructural change? It's very easy to say, and I want to take this answer away from you so that you can also kind of maybe think in a different direction. I want to say, sharp, they should go to jail. Yeah, whatever. That's not the conversation I want to have. I want to have the conversation that says, infrastructurally, what changes in South Africa post the Matlanga Commission? Because we have a problem. You can take out the entire head of SAPS. You can take out all of the guys that were there and are part of the supposed Big Five. You can lock up all the criminals. The infrastructure and the demand economics still drive that. The same people who are pushing drugs will find a way to push drugs in. The same hijacking syndicate still has orders. Those orders don't stop. They say, you were the third general not implicated in that thing. Come through. So what do we do next?
I think there's a part at which... So how do you... I remember saying before an election, even before the Matlanga Commission, I said, the thing that would keep me awake at night if I was president of this country is exactly that. That criminality and the criminal syndicates have really got control.
Yeah.
But we've learned places like Colombia, Chile, have fought this issue. And the first thing that you've got to do is, and I know you've, fine, we can accept the prosecutorial work that must happen. But you've got to liberate the state to do its work. And the problem with what Matlanga is in fact investigating is when political principles give people illegal instructions.
True.
That's what they part. True. It says, no, don't prosecute that one. Prosecute that one. So you've got to liberate.
Who says that? What do you mean?
The political principle.
Yeah.
So I'm the Minister of Police.
Okay.
We have an allegation against
you. I said bring those dockets back.
Okay. Where now you say, Minang, it's not, don't investigate that one, investigate that one.
You've become operational.
I'm giving you unlawful instructions.
Yeah. You've become operational.
And so we've got to liberate the state. And I think that the biggest project that we have failed to do is to not only build a competent state and a capable one, but an ethical one. And the way, in part, to do that, I've maintained, firstly, I think politicians should not go to parliament without any qualifications. I think it's a problem.
Councillors too, local government councillors.
Councillors, anyone. Because those people can't read balance sheets, so in their ignorance, they give instructions that are ridiculous.
And you end up with that Free State municipality where it's like, what do you do here? And special, don't.
And what ends up happening is that you have competent people Imagine being an advocate or being a silk. You want to go work for the state now, yeah. Tumamina. You arrive in there and you have to report to a minister and you think to yourself, chief, do you even know the basic tenets of the law?
Yeah.
Forget anything else. Do you know this?
Mm.
So we've got to, I will say this, and I know that's probably the answer you would have expected me to say, but we need a change of government.
Mm.
Until we have a non-ANC president,
yeah.
It means that you can then dismantle that infrastructure simply because that infrastructure is also political.
Yeah, that is the infrastructure of the ANC.
But the second part of that issue is that you can then free up decent civil servants to know they enjoy your protection.
Mm.
They don't. At this point in time, the criminals know they enjoy the protection of the politicians, yes. But the civil servants don't feel they are enjoying the protection of the politicians,
yeah.
Which is the enigma. And then in building capability and competence, I've always maintained you must set up entrance exams for people to become civil servants.
Mm.
You must make sure that you've got one choice, which is to say, once person X is employed as DG for X, they are the DG because they've gone through a rigorous ethical test. They've gone through, you build competence as the best. So that person knows, nonsense. You can't arrive here and make up things.
Mm.
I am now being empowered by the presidency as a director general here to say this department now, we run it like this.
You're an accounting officer.
Because you are then not only acting constitutionally, but you are safeguarding yourself up front to say, if you show up here and you want to play politics, we are not going to do that. Mm. If you say to me, Scala, in small things, hire my sister, please.
Yeah.
Hire my brother. Hire that one. Hire my branch member.
Yeah.
Hire this one. Do that. Let's limit that so that, a bit like developmental nations, you see Chile starting to do the same. You see Colombia became very aggressive against cartels and used all the military power to say we're going to come after them. You see countries like Singapore being able to say, let the best bureaucrats, let's get the best financial person to run our finances.
Mm. Yeah.
So that they always have the confidence to know I am the best.
Should we also separate, and I think I'm having this conversation with myself now as you're speaking around the professionalization of the state, should we, in a way, build in that there are professional portfolios? I mean, there should be less, but are there professional portfolios that exist within government, and those should be professionally incumbent. Staffed, yes. So, for instance, finance, like public works, you should probably be an engineer.
Health.
We have too many principals, not enough engineers.
Mm.
At health should obviously be a doctor, like how it has been in the past, but like, you know, times are tricky. So all of these, is that not where we start to say, because there's this thing, right, that exists that the ministers are there to overlook from the perspective of the voters and the government that has been formed by the people to go oversee, which is why the conversation around what did you tell them to do, what did you tell them to not do, to oversee the operations of that particular department. So the question then goes, if everything is, I'd say, falling apart from the basis of saying, yeah, no, they haven't fixed the pipes from the Vaal Dam for like 15 years. And you go, yeah, but that guy is maybe a lawyer and he's running a water company, let's say.
Sure,
whereas if it was an engineer, when maintenance is not run, and it's a competent engineer who has gone through the rigors of being selected to say, this is what he's done over his tenure, and I think he'd be the best placed person to do X, Y, Z. So where do we start to professionalize the state?
At
what level, and where do we start?
I mean, the first point of professionalization has everything to do with making sure that you've got a space where people can thoroughly assess the manifestos of parties. And I tell you why that matters. Because in South Africa, we don't hold parties accountable for their manifestos.
Yeah,
we don't
do
that. We don't cost it. We don't took expenditure reviews. The first thing that you've got to do is when somebody walks into the office and say, in manifesto 88, we will nationalize the land.
Yeah.
You say, you know what? the best people have looked at your manifesto, we've costed it. You either have money for it or you don't.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this is where...
Well, money and a plan.
Correct.
Can't just say stuff.
But politicians arrive, they think, oh, we got this plan. But no one is able to cost it. Because competence, to your second point, competence, you know, like, I have to, I'm not trying to be difficult, but I have a PhD in economics. But if you said to me, go run a water plant, I'd tell you, I'm incompetent for that job.
I get you.
So, but the job, if it's not defined, then everybody can do it.
Competence is not general.
So if we say the state exists to do the following things, here is the plan. So the president doesn't give us poems at State of the Nation and come up with grand things that's in front of us. No. Yes. Well, he must arrive there and say, here are the 10 things we are going to do. Here's how they are costed. The Minister of Finance will table a plan as to how we cost these things. Here are the following people we are going to employ to achieve those things. They are the best in the following way. The DG's list must be given. Then suddenly, at the end of the year, you can literally listen to the State of the Nation address and say,
They didn't do that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now suddenly, you've created the competence matched with accountability. I'm not one of those who argues the size of the state. I'm one of those who argues the competence of the state. And if you really want to put competence on the table, Mina, you know, somebody jokingly said to me, chiefs have got the capacity. Do they have the competence? So here's the thing. We assess chiefs at the end of every year by whether they've won the league or didn't win the league.
Do they make the top eight
or not? The government must also have the same thing. Because I'm telling you now, when I look at government's annual performance plans, all of those things, in South Africa, people are only fired because they are corrupt. They are never fired because they are incompetent.
There's no performance measure.
But if they have to start firing them because they're incompetent, they'll lose 90% of their staff.
But that then means that we either settle for mediocrity permanently or, I understand the tyranny of meritocracy, but I want to highlight this basic idea that says, chief, we agreed when you came as minister and I appointed you minister to say, you are going to build 100 houses. You've built 5, my chief, and the budget is gone. Surely we can't keep.
Can't work.
Yeah.
Surely, logically, at least it becomes straightforward. Because until we get there in a maturing democracy, so that the voters at the end of the 5 years can say, Musi, you as the president said you will grow the economy by 2%, 3%. You've only grown it by 0.8%. We should fire you. And that accountability is infused in society. Because even as things stand at the moment, if we don't have a culture of accountability, which we don't have at the moment, the teacher who teaches nonsense and that class of matriculants produces the
worst,
the worst results. And we say nothing. We've infused. When the policeman crime is going up, but the station commander still is there, they don't have cars.
But the station commander is at Konka.
Well, you know, exactly. Eventually, the
asking
society
asking girls to move out the way because he doesn't want to see bombs.
Is switching off the music.
Chief.
But you know, Bramusi, I think we have to bring it to a head because your handlers are looking at us weird.
It's round one.
Your handlers
are looking to a head because shy. What's his name? Marcus Yost is still alive and here. And he's here with Gavin Watson. Hi.
They're just off camera.
Gavin said so. Yeah.
So,
No, it's been a pleasure, Musi. Thank you. I wish we could talk for longer.
We could actually, but there's a lady.
I know. I sadly have another
engagement.
Can I ask you a last question quickly? Do you think Mkhwanazi did the right thing when he stood up and said what he said? That press conference, because I think everybody in politics that I've heard comments on it says, you know, not really.
He should have sent an email. This.
And I'm like, not really. I think he started a fire that I think needed to be started.
Mkhwanazi was the public whistleblower.
Mm.
And so he did the clever thing by asking the public to protect him.
Mm. And we will shame, yes?
Babita was a private whistleblower.
Mm.
She's ended up in a coffin.
Mm.
So in all fairness, these things we all know, guys, we all feel these things. And to me, Mkhwanazi is a hero because he tactically did the right thing. My genuine assumption is that I hope he didn't he'd do it out of a genuine sense of national duty.
Purpose,
rather than
yeah.
being informed by political pressure to act in a particular way.
Mm.
But when it's said and done, you know, the Whistleblower Act has to be put on the table. But like I said earlier, until decent civil servants feel they enjoy the protection of the state, you are going to end up with riffraff working for the government.
Yeah.
And then you criminalize the whole enterprise. And the net consequence of it is that
democracy,
the interests
yeah.
of the people
mm.
are subordinated to personal political party interests. Mkhwanazi may be the first, but I can assure you, I get emails all the time of people making reports. What we've got to do is, in the name of Babita, I feel like there must be a Babita Act
mm.
that says, if a whistleblower says,
yeah.
the state must let's rather jump. Ask how high,
yeah.
mm.
rather than, no, let's have a special thing or something like
yes.
that.
Yes, or no, it didn't come through the right channels.
Yeah.
Let's honor, because I think, you know, how many of you have had the courage to go tell your the wife of your friend to say, but your friend was
busy.
It takes courage. And so
can't do that. Hey,
So
if my friend does that,
you see, politics sometimes has that infused into it to say we are comrades. How can you report us like that?
Mm.
And what I'm saying is we should honor them up front.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you.
The fit.
I'll
come back for round two.
Yeah, this don't was nice. Eh? We've set it up because what I would have liked to speak about is the economic recovery plan, one, but two, how we build a proper path forward economically, and it has to involve trade.
And you know, for me, the number one issue in this country is that. Zongizinto, you know, of course we are obsessed about corruption, we should be. We're obsessed about other things. But when Buffett, for young people, the prospect of finding a job is 1 in 3. Guys, seriously.
It's crazy.
You are creating conditions for anarchy.
Yeah.
Mm.
And at the end of that, you will have a state that makes, even though it may exist in name, it will be impotent, and ultimately it's going to be a state where young South Africans will feel it as its enemy rather than any other thing. So,
All right, that's us. Catch us. Man. Like, subscribe, follow us on social media. You know the story. Take it easy. If it's easy, take it home.
But when I'm young in season,